This one is a little different, and so I am trying to get excited. I am excited.
Lawmakers begin digging into gas pipeline legislation. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, January 27th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, scientists explore the role of cyclones in Arctic weather and climate change.
Why are we getting the big sea ice retreat that we see? Certainly the cyclones are playing a role in that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick Click Give or contributing to a college savings plan. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
The Alaska Department of Transportation says highway access to Valdez has been cut off indefinitely by avalanches. As KCHU's Tony Gorman reports, the community may not have road access, but progress has been made to provide transportation to its residents.
Following an aerial assessment of multiple areas, the Alaska Department of Transportation determined that some mountains along the Richardson Highway are still fairly active. DOT maintenance engineer Jason Sakalaskas said once those areas are deemed safe, crews will begin work on the northern end of the avalanche area near Milepost 39.
On the north side, we do not see a lot of large avalanches, which is good. So the cleanup efforts in that location should fairly, I'll say, minimal or for fairly expeditious.
As for the Keystone Canyon area, there is still a significant amount of water behind the north side of the dam created by Saturday's slide. Sakalaskas said there is no safe way to approach relieving the water without moving it from the downstream side. But he did see one positive from the area. The low river in the canyon has begun flowing again.
We do see this as a positive measure because obviously it will drain the impounded flow, but also will be a controlled release of the water, which is on the north side of the canyon.
Temperatures are expected to be in the 20s and 30s for the rest of the week, but DOT officials are hoping for cooler temperatures to help stabilize avalanche conditions, especially at higher elevations. They don't expect to find any road damage from the slides. Valdez is still accessible by ferry and plane. The Alaska Marine Highway System modified its schedule to 3 direct trips between Whittier and Valdez. The Valdez City Council plans to hear an update on the situation during a special meeting tonight. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
You can see a video of the blocked portion of the highway at our website, alaskapublic.org. It took Governor Sean Parnell 3 years to get his oil tax overhaul through the legislature. Now the goal is to pass a bill setting the terms for a massive natural gas pipeline in 90 days. Hearings on the project started today, and a half dozen more are scheduled for this week alone. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
The gas line bill that Governor Sean Parnell introduced on Friday is long and detailed. So detailed, in fact, that the title alone takes up 2 pages. But here are a few highlights. The legislation sets the tax on gas at 10.5% without any complicated deductions or credits. It allows for those taxes to be directly paid in gas instead of money. It expands the powers of the Natural Resources Commissioner and the Revenue Commissioner to work out a deal with all the other parties involved. The governor has said this is the sort of stuff that needs to get turned into law if the North Slope producers are going to lock themselves into a project that's expected to cost upwards of $45 billion. For their part, lawmakers want to know if Parnell's arrangement is going to work if they're going to lock themselves into the project, too. At a Senate Finance Committee meeting on Monday morning, Anchorage Republican Kevin Meyer wanted to know what made this gas line proposal better than all the other plans he'd seen over the years. He likes the idea of the state partnering with the North Slope producers and getting an ownership share in the project, but needs to hear a little more.
This one is a little different, and so I am trying to get excited. I am excited. Is there anything else that you can share to help my excitement in the sense that, you know, I'm getting old. I've been hearing this too many times, and I'm done doing cartwheels. But I do want to see a gas pipeline in my lifetime.
Natural Resources Commissioner Joe Balash says there are two big reasons why this gas line is more likely to be built. For one, the legal settlement over gas at Point Thompson has made Exxon more eager to develop their leases there. And two,
in the past, when the companies have evaluated various opportunities to commercialize North Slope gas, they've had to take into account the oil that would not get produced if the gas was blown down and sold.
Balash says that's not the case anymore.
What we see in the next decade is that we are approaching the turning point in the field's economics, in the recovery of gas versus oil.
Basically, he's saying gas is Alaska's economic future, where oil is its past. While that answer satisfied some questions about the viability of a natural gas mega project, it triggered a whole different set of questions about the state's energy picture. Senator Mike Dunleavy, a Wasilla Republican, pointed out that just last session, the legislature passed Parnell's oil tax bill on the premise that it would boost production of that resource.
The exercise that we went through last year, how does that jive with the gas approach this year? In other words, we are anticipating and hoping for more production. Is that more production in oil? Is that predicated upon the long use system of reinjecting gas, or is there another approach?
The response Dunleavy got was that the Oil Tax Act they voted on last year will accelerate this transition to gas by encouraging Exxon, Conoco, and BP to produce more oil now. And on top of that, the Prudhoe Bay unit is big, and there are still areas within that unit with untapped oil that don't fit into that oil-gas trade-off. And here, the legislature thought it was done with oil taxes. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Two of the Republican candidates vying for U.S. Senator Mark Begich's job presented their records and thoughts on a range of issues for the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce lunch crowd today. Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell and former Attorney General and DNR Commissioner Dan Sullivan agreed on all of the topics, from supporting a gas pipeline to denouncing federal overreach and the NSA. Both men are pro-life, and both say the Environmental Protection Agency's watershed assessment in Bristol Bay was too early. Treadwell says the state invited exploration of the potential for a copper mine in the Bristol Bay region, and the EPA made a bad decision. He said the state needs to fight back.
Because we do protect the environment here. I'm very proud of my record on the environment, but I'm very proud of Alaska's record on the environment. And don't let them tell you you aren't smart enough. The EPA was looking for a sponsor for a long period of time. With about $1.5 million of research, they said, we can overcome close to $150 million worth of science on a $500 billion project. It's wrong. We have to fight it, and we have to be outraged. I am.
Sullivan says the state has the highest standards in the world, and companies should be allowed to go through the permitting process. He says the EPA completed a watershed study before there was a pebble mine proposal, and that was unprecedented.
They've never done it before. And when I was Attorney General and DNR Commissioner, most recently a joint letter from me and Attorney General Garrity, we asked the EPA, where do you get this authority? They never answer. And whether you are for Pebble or against it, and I know it's a controversial project, no Alaskan should be for an EPA that believes it can preemptively look at any project in the state on state land and tell us whether or not we can move forward on it.
Anchorage Chamber officials say candidate Joe Miller was invited but declined to appear today. Miller's spokesman, Randy DeSoto, says the campaign was not aware of an invitation until it was too late to participate. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an important funding source for local governments that didn't make it into the federal budget.
Boy, the idea of 10% of your budget just getting whacked with no advance notice or planning is really a tough one to swallow.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaskans who experience developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, and mental health conditions are important members of the state's workforce. From healthcare facilities and nonprofit organizations to retail stores and restaurants, Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries are succeeding in the workplace. The Trust encourages Alaska employers to consider ways in which trust beneficiaries and their unique skills can be good for business. Learn more at mhtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
With unseasonably warm weather reaching all the way up into the Brooks Range in Alaska and bitterly cold weather dipping deep into the lower 48 states, everybody wants to know more about the polar vortex, the jet stream that wobbles around the Arctic. Last month in San Francisco, a team of scientists with the Byrd Polar Research Center came out with a study that takes one more step toward better understanding that wobble by putting a lot more detail into high-latitude weather records of the past. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
No Alaska fishermen will be surprised to hear that scientists have discovered a bunch of northern storms that never made it into the weather forecast. Here's geography professor David Bromwich talking about a supercomputer analysis of more than a decade of weather data he did with two Russian researchers.
The results from these Russian colleagues of mine were that there's a lot more cyclones traversing particularly the land areas of the Arctic, surrounding the Arctic Ocean.
Using a huge amount of data crunching capacity at Ohio State University, the analysis was able to digest all sorts of weather data from aircraft, weather balloons, and on the ground, with a picture of the weather from 45 degrees to the North Pole every 3 hours between 2000 and 2012. In a grid of 30-kilometer squares, it shows about 40% more storms or cyclones than previously thought moving air masses north or south. That amounts to significant heat transport, which Bromwich says can tell us more about such things as why we lose sea ice.
Why are we getting the big sea ice retreat that we see? Certainly the cyclones are playing a role in that, as we saw in the fall of 2012 when there was a huge and very energetic cyclone over the Arctic Ocean that contributed to the retreat of that sea ice cover.
That was a summer storm unmatched in weather records for that time of year. It led to a record withdrawal of sea ice, and it's the kind of thing the team wants to zero in on next. And then there's what's going on now in Ohio, where Bromwich teaches, and it's expected to be 13 below this evening. What spins warm air up into the north can also spin cold air down to the south.
And we're getting a whole sequence of smaller scale lows coming around here. We call them Alberta Clippers. And so this is an example of the cyclones forming at higher latitudes and impacting the middle latitudes.
Up next for the research team is getting even closer resolution and looking for more detail in the big persistent low pressure areas that drive weather systems. For Alaska, that would mean primarily the Aleutian Low, which hovers over the western Gulf of Alaska through the winter months and spins out the weather systems that hit the western part of the state. Bromwich expects to see yet more turbulent systems in these polar lows.
We'll probably look at some of the more extreme events. We're thinking that this might be a good data set to explore the formation and the changes in the frequency and intensity of the polar lows. So that's one direction we probably will go in.
Bromwich says weather forecasters may find the study helpful. Basically, it's the same thing they already get from local knowledge. What can be expected in local geography as a large weather system moves in? In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
The U.S. Coast Guard owns Port Clarence, and many entities want a piece of the property, but the Coast Guard intends to hold on to at least some of the real estate. From KNOM, Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
As marine traffic escalates through the Bering Strait, the passage is gaining global prominence. And nearby on the Seward Peninsula sits Port Clarence, one of Alaska's few naturally deepwater ports. The Coast Guard owns the real estate, around 2,500 acres, and was set to divest the property after the site's Lorraine station shut down in 2010. However, Coast Guard Admiral Thomas Ostebo visited Nome recently and said with the port's strategic proximity to the Arctic and Bering Strait, the branch is keeping some of the property.
The Coast Guard would like to retain a portion of that property as a hedge for you all, for the federal government, for the people of the U.S. to have a piece of property that's right adjacent to what could become the most important international strait north of the Panama Canal.
The Coast Guard isn't the only entity interested in Port Clarence. Ostebo says federal agencies, the state, corporations, and industries all want a piece of the property. One of those parties is the Bering Strait's Native Corporation. Matt Gainley, BSNC Vice President of Resources and External Affairs, says the corporation claimed the land in 1977 under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, and the property is one of the final pieces to the corporation receiving full entitlement. Ostabo says the Coast Guard will be divesting an undetermined amount of port clearance, but couldn't provide a timeline. He is encouraging interested parties to negotiate agreements amongst themselves before approaching the Coast Guard with an offer.
My number one objective is that at the end of the day, everybody wins. And I think there's an everybody wins solution here with the Coast Guard retaining a piece, the state getting a piece, industry maybe getting a piece, other federal agencies getting a piece. And it's going to take a while.
In the meantime, Ostabo says the site is well preserved and in working order. This summer, the Coast Guard will station a patrol boat at the port to monitor Bering Sea waters, respond to offshore incidents, and assist with local vessel boardings. Reporting from KNOM in Nome, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Local government officials are getting nervous about Congress's failure to continue funding for a program that helps municipalities with a lot of federal land. Money for the Payment in Lieu of Taxes, or PILT program, wasn't included in the $1 trillion spending bill Congress passed this month, but it is reportedly part of the farm bill that lawmakers unveiled late today. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Local governments can't impose property taxes on federal land, so since the late 1970s, the federal government has been paying counties around the country, or boroughs here in Alaska, to compensate them for revenues that they otherwise could have generated through property taxes on that land. That's the PILT program. It stands for Payment in Lieu of Taxes. It's not a big program by federal standards. It totals about $400 million this fiscal year, of which Alaska would get about $27 million. But Delta Junction Mayor Pete Hallgren says it's a very important program for small communities like his, which gets most of its revenues from PILT.
We're looking at somewhere close to two-thirds of our income is the federal PILT. So you can see that the PILT is extremely important to the city.
But Delta, which is flanked on the south and west by Fort Greely and Army training ranges, may not receive the $930,000 that it's slated to get from PILT this year, because Congress didn't include funding for the program in the big omnibus spending package. That's what worries local government officials around the state, including Denali Borough Mayor Clay Walker. He says his borough will lose about a tenth of its revenues if it doesn't receive the $300,000 that was scheduled to get through PILT this year.
Boy, the idea of 10% of your budget just getting whacked with no advance notice or planning is really a tough one to swallow.
Walker says the Denali Borough Assembly passed a resolution earlier this month calling on Congress to fund the program. He says the borough counts on PILT to supplement emergency services and solid waste disposal. The Fairbanks North Star Borough stands to lose only about $400,000 if Congress fails to fund PILT, but Mayor Luke Hopkins says the borough is already making painful budget cuts, and borough officials don't want to ask taxpayers to fill a gap created by the lack of PILT revenue.
Payment in lieu of taxes is an important program, and we certainly don't want to see it expire.
Hopkins says this isn't the first time that Congress has been slow in funding PILT. The degree of partisan budget battling over the past few years, however, makes this delay disconcerting.
This one's getting down really close to the wire.
The uncertainty is especially worrisome because local governments must soon begin working in earnest on the next fiscal year's budget. U.S. Senator Mark Begich says he's optimistic about the chances of Congress restoring funding for PILT because it appears to have bipartisan support.
This is about fairness, and the federal government has possession of so much acreage within Alaska. They need to pay for some of these services.
In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering dental innovations from implants and Invisalign with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. Since 1978, the Older Persons Action Group has been the publisher of Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide newspaper for older Alaskans and their families. They now offer a digital version online at seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Hope Community Resources has been a part of Alaska for more than 45 years, providing assistance to Alaskans with disabilities. Information on all HOPE services and mental health supports is available at hopealaska.org. This message sponsored by HOPE Community Resources.
President Obama has declared November's storms in western Alaska a natural disaster. The storms inflicted heavy damage on Kotlik and Stebbins and created problems in other Bering Straits communities. Jeremy Zedek with the State Department of Homeland Security says the announcement is significant because it means the U.S. government will foot 75% of the bill for public repairs.
Damages to roads, boardwalks, utilities, other public infrastructure, critical facilities, perhaps like a clinic or a school that was damaged. So it's really to help the community to recover.
The state provides assistance to individuals and households. Those funds have not yet made it to the people in Stebbins. Part of the reason is that the state extended the deadline for applying for assistance until last Friday. Leaders in Stebbins are finalizing a list of funding priorities. The list includes building a new mitigating seawall, plotting a second evacuation route, and accelerating airstrip and water system updates. The U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Federal Environmental Protection Agency are joining in a new program that allows water polluters to gain clean water credits without reducing the amount of effluent they produce. The deal is not used in Alaska yet, but as KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports, it allows a permitted facility to purchase pollutant reduction credits from other users within the same watershed. Clean water advocates say the arrangement is missing the point of the Clean Water Act.
Late last year, the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Federal Environmental Protection Agency jointly announced that the two agencies would be collaborating on a program to support water quality trading, promising an easier way for businesses across the nation to comply with regulatory requirements. Here's how it works. The new collaboration allows regulated entities with clean water permits to purchase pollutant reduction credits generated by upstream sources within the same watershed. Ann Mills is a USDA Deputy Undersecretary for Natural Resources and the Environment. She says the program is used most in areas where nutrients are dumped into a waterway.
As far as these water quality trading markets are concerned, generally the most frequent credits that are traded are nitrogen and phosphorus credits. And these credits are basically measurable units of reduced nitrogen and phosphorus going into a river, a stream, or a lake.
So an upstream farmer or landowner can mitigate his own contribution to pollution by using conservation measures and then sell the amount of pollution he's saved to a downstream polluter.
And that farmer, if a market exists, can sell that credit to a permitted source like a water treatment facility or a power plant that needs to meet a regulatory requirement.
Mills says the trade can save power plants or sewage treatment facilities money too, because a permit holder could use a trade instead of investing in expensive technology to lower pollution. Mills says each state will ultimately determine who can trade credits.
These markets are developed at the local and state level to meet local and state level needs. And I think that's one of the strengths of this new tool, these nutrient credit trading markets or water quality trading markets, is that they are really developed from the ground up to meet local and state water quality needs.
The program has already gotten something of a dry run in a couple of eastern states. Trading systems in place in the Chesapeake Bay area allow farmers to sell water quality trading credits to wastewater treatment facilities and land developers downstream there. Mills says that a state entity would monitor the trading program.
It's no longer an emerging concept, but it's a concept that's fairly new.
Wade Strickland heads discharge permitting for the State Department of Environmental Conservation. If the EPA plan were to be utilized in Alaska, it's Strickland's department that would keep tabs on it.
As far as I'm aware, water quality trading is applicable to any sector of dischargers that can get coverage under the Alaska Pollutant Discharge Elimination System program, that being domestic sewage treatment plants, seafood processors, mining, oil and gas even.
Strickland says so far there is no framework for a water quality trading program in the state, and he says there won't be one until the state receives a proposal from two groups that want to trade.
No one's proposed it at this time. If we did get a proposal, before we acted on it, we would really look at it closely and make sure we develop a framework before we implemented any sort of water quality trading in the state.
Strickland says there's a fair amount of information about implementing such programs in the lower 48, although a program here would have to be crafted specifically for Alaska. But some water watchdog groups worry that the program doesn't reduce pollution. Pam Miller, executive director of Alaska Community Action on Toxics, says that the credit trading plan could backfire.
I think that pollution should not be treated as a commodity. And while this is touted as a business opportunity, I think the benefits to water quality and habitat are very questionable. And to me, this type of scheme goes against the goal of the Clean Water Act, which is really to eliminate sources of pollution rather than trade them.
Miller says she's disturbed by the lack of public information on the program. DEC keeps a list of around 60 impaired Alaska water bodies that it is monitoring for clean water quality. About one half are in the state's south central area. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
A snowboarder with deep ties to the Bristol Bay region will miss out on a return trip to the Olympics. KDLG's Mike Mason reports.
Girdwood's Kellen Chiflik-Sifsoff had hoped to make the U.S. snowboard cross team, but when the team was announced Saturday, she was left off. Chiflik-Sifsoff is now 24 years old. She grew up in Alegnagik and Dillingham before moving with her mother to Girdwood to be closer to the Alyeska Resort. She was in the running for one of three spots on the women's snowboard cross team, but was edged out by two snowboarders from Vermont and a snowboarder from Utah. Chiflik-Sifsoff was hoping for a return trip to the Olympics. She made the snowboard cross team in 2010 and became the first Alaskan native to compete in the Olympic Winter Games. Via Facebook, Chiflik-Sifsoff issued a statement about missing the Olympics. In that statement, she noted that she's been struggling through two consecutive seasons of injury and recovery, and she labeled this as one of the toughest seasons yet. She stressed that she's looking forward to cheering on her teammates in Sochi. Chiflik-Sifsoff suffered a season-ending knee injury in February of last year, and she battled other injuries this season. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Tony Gorman in Valdez, Anna Rose MacArthur and Zachariah Hughes in Nome, Tim Ellis in Delta, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Mike Mason in Dillingham. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Kristen Platt. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the 2014 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation. A message to parents from the Alaska Department of Education. Learning to read is the basis for all future learning. Parents can help their children get off to a good start as readers. Read with your young children every day. Do lots of talking with your kids. Make up stories together. Play games with words like rhyming games. Encourage your kids to write and draw stories and ask your school how you can help your children become good readers. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Education.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.